Hello, this is Francis Chung and
Aaron Vanderfeld.
This will be the drop 6 of the Patterson Practices SharePoint Guidance V2, and we've covered a lot of ground in this drop, so why don't we just dive into it?
All right.
So drop 6 we covered, we kind of finished off the list access stories that we covered. Previously we covered how to do the, well not previous, previous videos, but in a previous iteration, we covered how to do content query web part, not really development, but how to use the content query web part in your application. And the content query web part is very, 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 very useful, but sometimes it's hard to configure. And this iteration, we will cover a lot more about how to do list access. We also covered several ways to do caching, and we'll also show you how to extract workflow associations using PowerShell. This is really just an example of how you would extract some information out of the SharePoint object model using the PowerShell.
Okay.
So list access, the first thing we want to show in list access is how we can do cross-web list access. So for example, we've got a site collection. In our case, we've got a partner site collection. And our partner site collection is composed of many incident or order exception sites. And you might have a site over here that has some roll-up pages in it. So let's say that you want to show a whole bunch of list data, for example, task, open tasks. How would you show that? Well, we've shown you how to show that using the content query web part. Very useful web part. It does some caching. It's very performant. It's quite flexible. But there are some things that you can't get access to using the content query web part. So we've used the portal sitemap provider to give us access to that data.
For instance, property bags, right?
Right. Property bags you can't really get to. Also, some advanced math. If you want to do some different averaging or for example, min-max, you won't be able to do that using the content query web part, but you can get access to that data using the portal sitemap provider.
Awesome. Well, let's have a look at how we implemented this. Okay, let's switch to Visual Studio now. I'm not going to demonstrate how we're using the content query web part, because that's pretty straightforward. You just drag on the content query web part and you configure it to query lists. But what I'm going to demonstrate now is how we used the portal sitemap provider to query something that you couldn't query using the content query web part. For example, what we have done is we have presenter and a web part that shows you all open incidents and their statuses. Now, for each incident, we've created a site where you can collaborate to resolve the incident. And we'd like to get an overview of all the incidents and their statuses. Now, there's no list that you can query for that, but what we can do is use the portal sitemap provider to query all the sites that are present and see their statuses from there.
Because the status is actually, sorry, the incident status is actually being stored as a property bank hanging off the SP web, hanging off each incident site.
Exactly. So if I look in the code here, we have this presenter will retrieve all the data we need and make and assign it to the view so that the view can actually render the data. And it has one public method that says set incident status list data. You can see that we're using the portal sitemap provider here. And we're asking it, give me all the child nodes of type portal website nodes. And this will return me a list of, for instance, all the websites that are present. And like we mentioned before, the websites, some of the websites that we've created have properties in the property bag. And what we're looking for is the property that we've assigned business event, which we can identify if this is a site that's been created for an incident. So you can see here, if the business event is an incident, then we want to get additional data from it and assign it to the list. So this is a link query that will get that for us. And using this select statement, we're getting the title, the URL of the site, the status from the property bag, and also when it's been created and when it's been modified. After this link query completes, we're assigning it to the view so that the view can actually do the rendering. Show you that real quick. This is just a normal user control. And you can see that it's just using those properties again to put it into a table.
Okay, so we've covered the cross SPWeb list access. Now let's take a look at what you'd have to do to cross site collection boundaries and get access to list data that way. So in our first case, let's say you've got two site collections and you really want to pull data from one specific list in site collection A, and you want to pull that into site collection B. So we're calling that targeted content. We know that there's a specific place we want to get the data. So now let's say you have 10 site collections, but they're all pulling from this one specific place in your site collection A. In that case, we would recommend using the object model because it's really clear where you're going to go to get the data. Now, if that's not the case, if you've got data spread out over various site collections, then the object model will not be performing for you. You probably want to use search in that case.
But isn't it the case that search takes a while to propagate?
That's true. You're not going to get real-time data, but your search, your page, your results will be rendered very quickly.
All right. Well, let's have a look at how we implemented that. Okay, so now have a look at how to query data across the sites and site collections. We've implemented that in the partner promotions presenter, an example of it. So what we're trying to do here is each partner has its own site collection, but sometimes you want to display some promotions and you want to enter those promotions in a central location. So there's a different site collection where those promotions are present in a list, but on each partner site collection, or each partner site, we want to display that list. So if I have a look at it, this is a presenter for a web part, and we have some public properties, for instance, which website do we want to open, what's the target URL of that website. And in order to find the website that we want to query, we have this public method that says find promotion pages, because we want to get access to a list of the promotion pages. And we have to take that URL that we have and build a real URL out of it. So there's some code here that does that, formats it as a real URL. And then it will use this method, query for pages, passing the web that we found. Note here that since we're opening a web using new SPWeb, we also have to dispose it. So we're using the using statement, same for the SP site. And in this method, we're doing the interesting bits. So we're getting an SPWeb here that we want to query. And it's not the current web. It's the central web where the promotions are stored. And we want to have access to the pages list because we want to have access to URLs of certain promotion pages. And if we have access to that list, we're going to fire off an SP query. Now you can see that here we're formatting a simple camel query that will find all the promotion pages. And then we're calling get items on it. One side note, be sure never to use the items property because that might cause serious performance issues. But firing up a query like this using get items, that's perfectly fine. Now, once we fired off the query and this method returns, we get a list back of SP list items, and we can iterate over that to fill out a list of partner promotions. And you can tell here that we're interested in what the image is, what the name is, and the URL to that. Building up a URL to that promotion. And when we return this, we can display it in a nicely formatted list.
I just want to reiterate that we're actually opening up a web that is in a different site collection. So here we're getting access to list data in a separate site collection, but it's okay to do this because we're not scouring a whole bunch of site collections. We really are targeted about our list access here. So it'll be much more performant than iterating through all your SP collection or SP sites in your farm.
Okay. So next we're going to look at if you do have information that's scattered out through a bunch of site collections, a bunch of sites, and you want to get access to those. Well, you can imagine as an admin of Contoso, you might want to get an overview of what kind of tasks are open for, what kind of incident tasks are open with my partners. And that would mean querying all the partner sites and all their lists of incident tasks to figure that out. Because we have to query across all those incidents and across all those sites, using the object model would be really, really slow. So what we're trying to do now is using search to solve that puzzle. And we've done that in a web part, which is in the administration part, which we call the partner roll-up, because we're rolling up all the a whole bunch of partner information into a central place. And this web part creates, again, a view, which is the control, and a presenter. And the partner roll-up presenter is going to fire a query into the search engine. So you can tell here that we're creating a query, which will search for the path, the title, and description of things that are content type incident task, and we're looking across all sites. This is a very broad query that we want to get all the tasks that are related to incident tasks. We're using a full text SQL query to fire this off, and calling execute on the query, filling a data table with the results so that we can pass the results like path, title, and description back into the view in order to render it.
In iteration 6, we also covered the area of caching. So we took a look at how we would cache business data catalog data. So in our case, in our reference implementation, we have product catalog information, for example, your products, your categories, and that whole hierarchy. That's all stored in a service that is being surfaced to our application through the business data catalog. Now, you can imagine, that might be slow if you've got a lot of products or very deep category structure. So we want to cache that data. We also want to take a look at how we would go about caching the published pages. For example, the promos that we took a look at before, how would you cache that such that we would have the right people looking at it, but also be performing? For example, if I was a member of Partner 1, if I were to see that page many times, I wanted to be performant, but I wouldn't expect you to see the same content, mainly because we have some web parts on that page that have pricing data pertinent to the specific partners.
So we're trying to cache data, but also prevent other partners from seeing cache data for other partners.
Right.
Okay. Now let's have a look at how we cache data from the BDC. Since data from the BDC isn't cached by the BDC itself, we have to do that for it. Now you can imagine if we were to implement caching in each individual web part that was going to use the BDC, that caching would be spread out all throughout our application. That's not very, very manageable. So what we've done is we've implemented a repository pattern. A repository pattern basically means that we've provided access to a piece of data, in this case, data that's stored inside the BDC, and expose it through a well-known interface. Now, this interface also allows us to test our web parts and our presenters in isolation without having to actually have a real business data catalog present to perform unit tests. But it also allows us to implement caching in a centralized location. So let's look at a product catalog repository. Now, this repository is used for instance, by pages and controls that are displaying product details, or the category nav, or and a bunch of those controls. Now, there's a ton of methods here that are like get product SKUs, get product information by SKU, and all these methods we'll call the BDC internal. Now, there are some web parts that still call the BDC directly, but those are SharePoint out-of-the-box BDC web parts. It's not really possible to route those through a custom repository. But all the web parts that we've created ourselves will actually use these repositories rather than call the BDC directly. So let's have a look at one of these methods. For instance, get product SKUs. It's not implemented. This, get product by SKU. This method gets a SKU and will query the BDC to get its data. And normally you would say you would only do something like this where you're saying, okay, make sure it's there and get it. But we want to have this cached. So in the central location, namely in the repository, we're first testing, is this piece of data already present in the cache? If it is, we can just return it. And if it's not, then we have to retrieve it we did before. And so we're calling find specific entity, make sure that it's there, and create the product here.
Just note that we are using the out-of-the-box ASP.NET cache as our cache here.
Okay. And you can tell here that we're adding the product to the cache. And we've decided to just cache it for 5 minutes, which is enough for our situation. There are times when you want to implement, for instance, cache expiration policy, or maybe tweak this time a bit, because sometimes information is, if it's a bit volatile, you might want to cache it shorter. If it's very static data, you can cache it for a lot longer. So as you can tell here, we've cached some data, and this should increase the performance of the pages and the web parts that are actually using this repository. One nice thing about using the repository pattern and having all your data access logic in a single place is that you can implement your caching later. What that means is it's quite hard to think of in advance what kind of things you might need to cache and what might things you don't need to cache. And caching can, if it's implemented correctly, can really improve the performance of your application. But if you do it wrong, and if you cache everything or nothing at all, then it's likely to hurt your performance. So the nice thing about this is that you can look at your application under load and see, okay, what kind of things are requested often, and what kind of things would benefit from caching. And once you've identified those, you can implement caching in a central location, namely here in the BDC.
And it's also a great place to centralize your tuning. For example, here we're caching for 5 minutes. If you want to change it such that it's cached for a specific amount of time, you know, instead of sliding scale like we have here, you can go to one place to tune it.
Right. And it also might be interesting to point out that there are some tools in the .NET framework to look at the cache hit ratio. So you can look at the performance counters and look at how well your cache is doing.
So we've covered how to use the repository pattern to leverage the ASP.NET cache to cache specific calls to the BDC and to the service. Now let's jump out and take a look at how we can cache published pages. So remember, we created promotions. We want to cache promotions such that if I'm partner one and you're partner two, you don't see the page that I just hit. Right. So let's see how we configure that. Let's go into site administration here. So actually, site settings of our site collection. This is the site collection that houses all of our promo published content. And we're actually going to be using the cache policy. All right, so here we see a list of the cache profiles. The extranet published site profile is the one we want to use, mainly because we want to vary by user rights, and we believe this is the vary by that will allow users in partner one to see their content but not share that content with users in partner two. Right. So again, we're using the extranet published site cache profile. We'll also confirm with our test team that this works as we expected. Now let's take a look at how we implemented that. Here we've got in the portal feature receiver, here in the portal here, we have a promotion site feature receiver that goes and updates our site collection. What we do here is we go ahead and grab the SP site. So here we got the SP site, and we're actually wrapping it in a site cache settings writer. So here we are able to turn on the cache. We're also turning on the cache debugging output so that when you do a view source and look at the bottom of that, you can see whether the page instance was actually rendered using a cache version or not. We're also using the cache profile number 3, which is the partner extranet that I just showed you. And then we're just going and saving that into the properties of the site collection. Again, this is a feature receiver that's applied to that site collection that should turn on the MOS output caching for that site collection and all of its subsets. So the last bit we want to cover today is how you would go about extracting data that we would have stored in the content database in SharePoint. So for example, a workflow association is something that you would typically see as part of the application lifecycle management process where, say you go and deploy a WSP, and then you, within the SharePoint UI, start associating workflows with lists. And after you've done that, you've got a site just perfectly to your desire, what you want to do is you want to extract out that meta information so that you could potentially capture it and put it back into a WSP, so that new sites based upon that would already have those workflow associations. So how would you do that? We already have tools available that would capture site columns and content types as well as ASPX pages, but we don't really have any tools that would allow you to take a look at the workflow associations. So we just whipped up a quick PowerShell script that will allow you to extract that information. You can use that same approach to pull out other information out of the SharePoint object model that you'd be interested in. So let's take a look at that PowerShell script. So what we're doing here is we're checking for parameter. The parameter that we need to pass into this script is the URL to your site collection. Once you've provided that, you go ahead and load the SharePoint assembly. We go ahead and create an SP site instance based upon using the URL, pass it in as a parameter. And once you've got that, we iterate through all of the webs. And then for each web, we look at all lists in the web. And for each list in the web, we look at all the workflow associations. And then we just show the workflow association data. Let's take a look at how it looks when we run it. So here's our partial script here. So again, we're passing the parameter of the URL to the site collection into our script. And as you can see here, it displays the URL for the web, the name of the list, and the SOAP XML, which contains all the meta information for that workflow association. So this is just a quick example of how you can use a PowerShell script to walk the object model and get information out of SharePoint.
This brings us to the end of our webcast on the PMP SharePoint Guidance V2 Drop 6. In this episode, we talked about several ways of doing list access. We talked about two different caching approaches, and we talked about how to extract information such as workflow association using PowerShell scripts. If you've become interested in the things that we are doing in this SharePoint guidance, go to our site. It's on codeplex.com/SPG. This was Francis Chung and Aaron van der Valk from Patterns and Practices. Thank you. Bye-bye.